The Mincing Rascals podcast is sponsored by Ottawa, Illinois, the middle of everywhere. This fall, as the leaves are changing, get outdoors and enjoy some relaxation. Plan your trip today. Log on to visitottawail.com.
Today is Wednesday. It's Halloween's Eve. It's the 30th of October, 2024. Hi, this is John Williams, and you're listening to the Mincing Rascals podcast. You can hear me weekdays on WGN Radio from 10 to 2.
I'm Kate Flies, a former Chicago reporter and columnist, now doing the Chicago history website, Roseland Chicago 1972.
Hey, it's Brandon Pope, host of On the Block, powered by Blocks of Chicago and WCIU, and host of this Friday's election special on WVON, Friday, 6 to 9 p.m.
I'm Marge Halperin, drawing on decades of experience as a journalist, a communications consultant, government reform worker, doing what I can to challenge authority.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the authority that Marge likes to challenge. I'm the editor and publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, a Substack newsletter.
I don't know if it's Marge and Eric so much as it is Eric and Austin sometimes.
It's a good battle.
Who are maybe most at odds.
And every time he's not on, I miss him. No, I got to say it.
Actually, as I wrote a note to myself to start the show today, I was hoping that he would be here, but you guys all have many responsibilities. This is our last podcast before Tuesday. We'll close today's episode with my asking each of you who you think will win the presidential election. But if I may, I just want to start with something simple and local that maybe doesn't affect all of our listeners, but illustrates a larger point. I'm now, for the first time in my life, trying to cast an intelligent vote for school board. My neighbor said, "Have you heard anything about our school board candidates? Does Austin have any thoughts?" And I said, "Well, I know who he's not voting for, anyone the Chicago Teachers Union supports." But I did reach out to Austin, and after his suggestion, he also then wrote, "But to be clear, I dislike all of them." So then I asked Eric Zorn, and Eric replied to my request with a candidate that was almost the exact opposite of the one that Austin suggested that we vote for. My neighbor was going to go with Austin's suggestion, then she's leaning into Eric's suggestion, and she worried that at least one of the options that we have to vote for in our district has no educational experience, but some say they're good business people. And it's just a microcosm of what we all try and do, cobble together information that helps us make informed votes. But do we really? I don't know what's going to make a good school board member.
I think there's enough information out there that you can make a relatively informed decision. I believe the person I recommended in your district was the one who was not endorsed by either the CTU or the Illinois Policy Institute.
Austin, right. But that's okay. So go ahead, Eric. Why would we take the two most informed categories of people relative to the topic and say, whoever they say, don't go with that?
I read the bios and I read the questionnaires, and I take John's request very seriously, as everyone can tell. And I looked at them. I'm not in his district. But I went and read those, and I thought that the candidate I recommended, I think it was Hooper, but I'm not.
Yeah,
sure
you did.
Mm-hmm. It seemed like she had a pretty decent resume. And I thought, well, since she's not endorsed by either of them, maybe she'll be sort of down the middle, which is kind of where I would like my new school board members to be. But, this is a small problem when you're talking about, you got to vote on one little election there. And that's I understand that not knowing that much about the candidates is an issue, but think about voting for judges where they give you page after page of judges to vote, and you don't know anything about them. And if you want to know something about them, you've got to go to a bunch of different websites with the Chicago Council of Lawyers and all these other people who have evaluated them, and it's just head spinning. So the challenge of voting for a school board member is minor compared to that.
And it's also confusing to me, because why would a billionaire from Arkansas give hundreds of thousands of dollars to support one of the candidates that I can vote for? That sounds fishy. Maybe that should influence my vote. But the Waltons are in for seven figures on this.
The op-ed that I wrote for Cranes says it's come down to two candidates in these districts for that very reason. You either go for the one that the out-of-state billionaires are backing in the hope that we get a voucher system. Vouchers, which, by the way, in other cities, studies show 75% of them go to families already in private schools, and it takes the money out of the public school system. Or you go for the CTU and feel like you're throwing a lot more votes into the mayor's camp because he's positioned himself as the CTU mayor, which I wish he hadn't done that. And I think he's hurting himself, and the backlash, if we see backlash in this election that leads us to some kind of voucher program, I hope we don't, but it'll be kind of his fault because he's set this up. You can vote for those third candidates, but the money's not there, and I have a feeling you won't have a lot of success.
Kate, how informed is your vote? You're in the Chicago Public School.
Yes, I turned out to be in District 10, which was a little confusing because I was getting mail from candidates in a different district for quite a while. But I was just going very strategically this time, voting for sure a candidate that was not CTU-backed, since Johnson is already going to have a advantage majority-wise on the board, appointing 11 members and the president. It is slightly more nuanced depending on the race in terms of whether you're voting for somebody who is going to turn everything over to charter schools or turn everything over to the CTU, right? In my district, the person that I ended up voting for, and I only had three people to choose from, but I voted for Karen Norrington Reeves. She was the one who was backed by the Tribune, not backed by CTU. CTU sent out some terrible, terrible literature on her claiming that she was a Trumper and going for the Agenda 2025, et cetera, et cetera. But she, like a lot of other candidates, had already said, I am not Republican. I've been a lifelong Democrat. And while I do back some school choice, I am not looking to have it be all private schools and vouchers and charters. I can only assume that, you know, these other PACs gave me money because they think I am more likely to support their stuff. But that doesn't mean, I didn't ask for that money, and it doesn't
You're
mean
not
that
beholden to them. Yeah.
Anything. You know, people do have to take that into account. In my case, I picked her because she wasn't the CTU person. And I think we need that balance for sure for this iteration of the board. And in addition, since she was backed by the Tribune and some other people, I took her to have the biggest chance of winning against Robert Jones, the CTU person. Yeah. So the other two people may have been just fine, but I just felt she had more of a chance to win. So
it's funny that the Tribune is, of course, comfortable endorsing candidates like this, which matter, but they sure didn't want a piece of the presidential pie, did they? Brandon, what I think they should do is come up with AI. I want to tell a computer, here's who I am, or have it ask me questions, and then have it tell me who to vote for on something where judges or school board members, I don't know a lick about what it takes to be a good school board member. I don't even know if charter schools are a good idea or bad idea.
You know, the funny thing is, I think you could probably do just that with ChatGPT. Slippery slope, though. We're going to have the robots and computers start suggesting decisions for us. I don't think a lot of people are tuned in or tapped into this school board election as they probably should be. Or maybe it depends on the district. I'm in a weird district. It's called District 6. It comprises the Loop, but also Southside neighborhoods, which makes no sense at all. Two economically completely different areas. So I'm not really quite sure why it's lumped that way. I don't think it makes much sense. So I think it makes the decision tougher for people as well, because the needs of schools in the Loop and in Old Town and in Gold Coast are way different than the needs of schools in Bronzeville, right? Like, I just don't get it. So they got to figure out these districts, I think. The makeup isn't making much sense.
Welcome to the world of downtown residency, because
right
here we have five aldermen who impact our district. We have two state reps, two state senators. Now we have two school board members, or we're about to have two school board members. This is why I'll give my plug, why I am one of the organizers of a group called One Community Near South, where we're trying to get organized to have our voice heard. You can stand in a street corner and have a problem, and it might be in the fourth ward, but then across the street's the third ward, and the north side of the street could be the 34th, and it's hard to get even basic city services.
My understanding is that when it is a fully elected board, the two representatives per district are supposed to come from opposite ends of the district. Mm-hmm. How are they going to figure that out?
I think they're just going to cut the districts in half. Isn't that the plan? They're just going to set them up so they can cut them in half.
Can we get together a drive right now to get on the ballot next time around? A referendum to go back to an appointed school board.
Well, at least we gave it a try.
And this, you know, the Sun-Times BEZ was reporting this week that how much money is poured into this. And John was alluding to it earlier, like the, you know, the Walton family is throwing all this money from Arkansas into Chicago. And it's because when you have these big cities doing school board elections, they become proxy fights between teachers' unions and charter school advocates from all over the country. We saw it in Los Angeles. I sounded the alarm on this several years ago in my Tribune column saying, like, look, they spent $20 million on four elected school board seats in Los Angeles. And if you want to just infect all your school stuff with national politics, you should do that. But I think I'm with Kate that I would like the mayor to be responsible for the schools. And if we don't like what the mayor's doing, we'll throw him out and get the next one in. So that would be my preference, even still. And I know people were all excited about democracy in the school board, and the CTU was saying all elected school board. And then when Brandon Johnson was elected mayor, they were like, well, wait a minute, maybe just half of them elected the first time because we don't really believe in the all
well,
elected.
He's known to switch gears. He said before the election, look, I'm not going to raise property taxes. I'm the only candidate who won't raise property taxes because I'll make wealthy corporations finally pay their fair share. Eric, I'm quoting from something I think you actually posted, but what happened at the city council meeting today?
Well, he proposed the largest property tax increase in the last 10 years, and he blamed his predecessors for it. But, you know, you got to know the lay of the land when you're going in as the mayor. So when you make a promise like that, and he said it over and over again, right? I mean, there are all kinds of examples of quotes for him saying, I'm the one who's not going to raise property taxes. And now he's going to come sort of crawling back and saying, yeah, I'm going to raise property taxes because all of his other plans to raise money, which most of us said at the time were not likely to succeed. And we asked him what his plan B was, and he didn't have one. And so here we are. We now know that his plan B is to renege on his campaign promise. I'm not so sure that it's a terrible idea. But one thing that was a bad idea, I think, was was last year. I don't know if he officially repealed it or just didn't do it, but Mayor Lightfoot had put into place a system where property taxes rose automatically with the rate of inflation so that it insulated members of the city council from having to give these unpleasant votes to raise property taxes. Does anyone remember, did he officially get rid of that provision, or did he just not?
He didn't do it. He definitely didn't include it in last year's budget. He left it open-ended as to whether they could come back to it in the future.
Well, the frustrating thing is there are alternatives, and he's focused on layoffs. I don't want to lay off police and firemen. Well, I could make one point about the fire department, and that is, you know how when somebody calls an ambulance, fire truck gets there first. It's because the city kind of has more firefighters than they need and not enough EMTs. So, but they're trained from the fire department and they get there first. It's a huge expense, unnecessary expense, and someplace where the city could really update the department's budget and organization, make it more effective and cheaper to run. Those kinds of things, I think, are part of, whether that specific one, I don't know, but that's part of the thing that the Civic Federation and former Inspector General Joe Ferguson put forward before we saw the mayor's budget and said, here's a whole laundry list of things that you can do instead of raising taxes. Now, it did include furloughs. It included one furlough day for city employees for every two-week paycheck. I think that is harsher than the city ought to do. That's a real letdown of the agreement of when you hire someone, here's what you're going to earn.
It's a 10% pay cut, essentially.
Yeah, so I think that was too severe. But some furlough days in the past, we've had 3-4 furlough days in a year. That saves something. There's some perhaps combination there without really violating the trust.
Wasn't he going to tax trades on the Chicago Board of Trade? And wasn't there going to be a head tax? I mean, he had all these creative revenue streams. And I don't know where all that money is. Obviously, we're not getting it. But I wonder whatever happened to all those ideas. He campaigned on that.
I think some of them need approval from General Assembly in Springfield, and others just didn't fly. They tried the Bring Chicago Home initiative, right, which was to raise the real estate transfer tax, and that was rejected by voters. So, you know, I think he just ran out of options. He had all these ideas, but even during the campaign, anyone who was really paying attention was pointing out to him that these increasing taxes like that is going to be really difficult. And if you're going to tax transactions on the Board of Trade, that could have been a lot easier back in the days with open outcry when you had the pits and everyone was working there. Everything is done electronically now. And if you were to impose a significant tax on these trading companies, they can just move their operations. They move their big servers and their offices to another state without any trouble. And that could be a real problem. So he had all kinds of problems that he just didn't seem to think through, which is one of his trademark moves.
Meanwhile, there's that referendum I just realized that says, would you agree to increasing taxes on people who make more than $1 million a year for the purpose of reducing property tax rates?
Yeah.
It was tied very specifically, frankly, I'm not surprisingly in the tax the rich camp, but for the purpose of reducing property tax rates is pretty arbitrary, or struck me as arbitrary when I voted last week. Now, maybe it's more relevant, and I wonder if that is going to impact the result of that referendum.
Why don't you like attaching it to a property tax relief?
Because I don't know that that's the priority for our city right now. It might be after this increase, but otherwise, we were in the middle of all these discussions about how the schools are woefully short. By the way, Sam Walton, if you got money to throw at Chicago public school elections, how about throwing it at the schools and helping us give better quality education to everyone, whether they're at a private school or not? So at any rate, we clearly need money for the schools. We need money. The city budget had this big hole. The CTA is also desperate for funds and on a financial cliff. Is lowering property tax the thing you would do with that extra revenue?
Well, that's the point, isn't it?
It took the decision away from the people in charge of making that decision.
Well, that's the point. I think people wouldn't necessarily even trust the city or the mayor to spend the money that they got from that on what they said they were going to spend it on, which was, I think, one of the arguments that caused the similar referendum in 2020 to go down to defeat, which we tried to impose a graduated income tax in Illinois, and it failed. That was a binding referendum. It was an attempt to
And this one's not.
The Constitution. This one is advisory, and so it's more of like one of those, you know, do we enjoy motherhood and apple pie kind of advisory referendums that they stick on the ballot, usually to just keep other stuff off the ballot that they don't want on an advisory.
That too.
It really puzzled me, Tribune spent a Sunday editorial banging on about what a bad idea this was when it's an advisory referendum. We're in the middle of this really, really important political season, and they spent a Sunday editorial urging people to vote against an advisory referendum. I thought that was one of the strangest choices I've ever seen from that.
Gosh, Eric, what would you have had them talk about instead of that?
Well, let me just clarify. You said that the Tribune is not endorsing. And the reason they're not endorsing this year, the editorial board is not endorsing, is that 2 years ago, an order came down from Alden Global Capital, which owns the Tribune and a bunch of other newspapers, that their papers are not going to endorse in gubernatorial, senatorial, or presidential elections. They feel like that it needlessly alienates readers, which is probably true because those endorsements don't really have much of an effect. One problem I'm seeing is, and I've been trying to work behind the scenes a little bit with some of my former colleagues, the Tribune needs to get out in front of that because there's a widespread belief out there that the Tribune is afraid to endorse in the presidential election, that they're going to pull something like they did in 2016 and endorse a wacky third party candidate, and that's not the case. I think if you read the Tribune's editorials from this past year, you'll see that they are not at all happy with Trump, and that they're favorably disposed toward Harris. And I would guarantee you that if they were to be able to write an editorial from their hedge fund overlords, they would endorse Harris. And I think they're making a real big mistake by appearing to be cowardly and lumping themselves in with the Washington Post and the LA Times, where the owners do appear to be quite cowardly because they yanked editorials at the last minute, endorsement editorials for Harris at the last minute. So I just want to clarify that, because I do think that the folks on the Tribune editorial board are getting unfairly maligned for this right now.
Well, I'm among the 200,000 or so who
250 now
canceled. Is it up to 250? Yeah. He canceled the Washington Post subscription, and a lot of our friends in media, whether they work for the Tribune or not, have chastised me, saying you need to support the paper, and I've always been one who did. I did not cancel my Tribune subscription when they endorsed Gary Johnson in 2016, angry as I was. But in this case, it's so craven, and Bezos... So Trump had a public meeting with Bezos and another one of his companies, and then later that day, he announces that they're not going to have an endorsement. It looked like a clear favor to Trump to not endorse, because they would have endorsed Harris. We all know that now. The timing of it, to your point, Eric, totally sucked, and it's an insult to people who flocked to the Post, and I was one of those, too. When Trump was elected, brought in by the democracy dies in darkness line, now it turns out the Post is the first to turn out the light. I'm angry and feel let down. I'm not saying I wouldn't come back. And by the way, when you cancel, if you have not yet canceled your subscription to the Post, they will offer you a new subscription at 50%. Great. So you could come back.
You know what I'm being told to do is just stop shopping. Just stop shopping at Whole Foods and don't buy stuff on Amazon.
That could be next. If Trump wins and Bezos continues down this subservient path, I think that'll be next. He will see the wrath of the progressive population that backed the Post in the face of Trump's first election. And I think we'll come back in stronger numbers against Amazon if he does.
I just feel terrible for the journalists at the Washington Post being put in the situation. The debate about whether paper should endorse or not, I think, is a worthy discussion and debate, because people still can't distinguish between the editorial board and the newsroom. And we haven't figured out a way to properly explain that, or we just have failed to explain that to the general population. However, the timing, it just gives off this preemptive obedience to a guy running for president that has said he'd like to be a dictator on day one, who has insinuated he's going to radically shift the way our country works and punish his political enemies, punish journalists who write anything that he deems negative or against him. It just seems like a very cowardly and anti-democratic move from the Washington Post and from the LA Times and from all the other papers, Chicago Tribune. It just seems, why this election? Why is this the election you stood out? Why is this the one? It just feels cowardly to me.
Right, rather than the one that you've decided you're going to draw a line in the sand and we're no longer going to endorse. This is when, in fact, you should get in the game. For the fifth time in its history, The Atlantic is endorsing somebody. And one of the times was Abraham Lincoln. I mean, they just don't do that often, but they said, no, we have to. We have an obligation to do that. Not to step out, but to step in.
I mean, look, if Nickelodeon still does Kids Pick the President, why can't a newspaper make an endorsement? Like, Nickelodeon just had all these kids vote in a mock election, and they chose Kamala Harris by a slight edge.
Really? By a slight edge?
Politics, right? Wow. But that's wading into politics, but that's cool for Nickelodeon, but not cool for the LA Times and the Washington Post.
By the way, Donald Trump just said, Pete just handed this to me, our producer. Donald Trump said today, you notice the Washington Post and the LA Times, they're not endorsing anybody. You know what they're really saying? They're saying this Democrat is no good and they think I'm doing a great job. They just don't want to say it. That's his spin on that. And he,
I would if I were him.
That makes that he gets to make that case.
Jeff Bezos obviously did the completely cowardly thing in dropping the already written, I understand, editorial for the Washington Post. I completely agree that people are not voting for president according to newspaper endorsements. In that sense, it's not going to make any difference. That's true. But it's a cowardly thing a week before the election to quash an editorial and pretend that you're doing it, as he has claimed in his own little essay, you know, on principle. It's just on principle wrong for a newspaper to endorse when all newspapers have been doing endorsements forever, and just all of a sudden now, Jeff Bezos, it's a problem. Come on. It's not something that if I worked there, I would quit over, considering the fact that he's not doing anything to keep the Post from writing screed after screed against him for what he did. and printing all the letters also opposing him on this. So, you know, they're airing all their dirty laundry. So he's not stopping that. So in that sense, if I worked there, I don't think I would quit over that. I don't blame people for deciding to cancel their subscriptions, though.
Well, I would ask you, though, to, in the name, like I'm with Brandon, and of course, Brandon, you're the head of a Chicago branch of journalists anyway. I would ask people then to So take your money out of the Washington Post and give it to some other journalists. Give it to the New York Times. Vote that way. But I hate to disenfranchise journalists. I mean, this is about the strength of journalism. We're cutting our nose off if we unemploy journalists, even though we don't like the owner of one of the papers. But I'm not sure, Eric, I understand exactly the rationale behind, well, it's okay to no longer endorse in this election if you said 2 years ago you weren't in fact going to do it. I don't understand the principle 2 years ago either. And they probably knew well who the Republican candidate was going to be. I think it's mercenary. I think it's cowardly. I think it's what happens when people run newspapers who aren't newspaper people.
WGN doesn't endorse candidates.
No, never has.
I don't consider that cowardly. And I have an outstanding sort of problem with the general idea of unsigned editorials, the voice of the institution, especially now when you realize that when you see an opinion in the newspaper, you can't be sure if it's the opinion of the editorial board, if it's the opinion of the editor of the editorial board, if it's the opinion of the publisher or the owner, because you just don't know, because they don't tell you and they're not signed. And I don't know why a newspaper has to have a voice anymore. That comes from the days of the partisan press. I like to see opinion writing. I enjoy really good, vigorous opinion writing. I don't understand the conceit of a Chicago Tribune or sometimes having a voice that is other than the voice of individuals who work for it. That aside, I do think Alden made that decision because I think they realized that it does help in down ballot races to have recommendations because voters aren't paying any attention. Voters do pay attention to senatorial races, gubernatorial races, and particularly presidential races. And so when you come out and say this institution and somebody in this institution, maybe it's the owner, maybe it's the editor, maybe, you know, you don't know who wants to put their thumb on the scale here, you get readers. Every time they do an endorsement, they lose readers because people, it's like some half the readers or so are furious about
boo-hoo.
It.
And they
cancel. Yeah, but is that why they do it?
But there's no reciprocal benefit. You can't say, well, they're helping people make a decision because they're really not. They really don't make a difference, those editorials, those endorsements. They just, I mean, Hillary Clinton won just about every single endorsement in 2016. And she did win the popular vote, but she lost the Electoral College. So I just don't think they make a difference. I do think, though, that it is really ugly for corporate owners to dictate a policy like that. I would like that decision. If Chris Jones, the editor of the editorial page of the Tribune, or I guess they don't do it at the Sun-Times for other reasons, but if Chris Jones decides that he doesn't want to make endorsements for the reasons that I just articulated, that should be up to him. He's the editor of the editorial page. I don't want Par Ritter, the publisher, or Alden Global Capital making that decision, because I don't think readers, I think that's untransparent, and I think that goes way beyond the mission of a newspaper and what an editorial board is supposed to be.
I agree with you, and at the same time, it feels a little pie in the sky. You buy a newspaper, let's face it, you're going to want to dictate a few things.
As our friend Neil Steinberg says, if you buy a bicycle, you're going to want to ride it around the block a few times.
Yes. Just an interesting little aside, which is that in 1971, when Mayor Richard J. Daley, or as I sometimes call him, the real Mayor Daley, was running for, I guess that would have been his fourth term. And of course, at that point, he had gone through many controversies and the press was very critical of him by 1971. So they weren't just being a lot of lapdogs at that point. There was plenty of critical reporting. We had been through many riots, the 68 convention, you name it. And yet all four then existing newspapers wrote editorials just backing him to the hilt against the head of the Better Government Association. Can you imagine a more upright person to be running against anybody but the head of the Better Government Association? And everyone agreed that he was wonderful. And yet all four papers endorsed daily, and the reporters were just out of their minds about it.
You have a piece on that, don't you, Kate?
I am in the process of doing a whole series of Mayor Daley mini bio pieces leading up to the editorials, separate editorials that the reporters actually wrote themselves. It really got started by the Daily News and Sun Times. The Daily News would not let their reporters print it in the newspaper themselves. They had to take out a political ad and put it in the ad. But the Sun Times let the reporters run it on the op-ed page, and so did Chicago Today. It was just an interesting way that the reporters responded at that time. And that was an incredible thing for them to do at that time. Today, I don't think people would be all that surprised about it, but it was an astounding thing in 1971.
I don't think it would happen today. I know that there was a great deal of tumult and upset in our newsroom, in the Tribune newsroom, I should say, when I was there in 2016, when the Tribune endorsed Gary Johnson for president over Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And I think nobody even thought that the Tribune would publish a signed editorial from or an op-ed from the staff taking issue with it. I got crosswise with my editor at the time because I've tweeted out an objection to our endorsement of Bruce Rauner for governor. And I was chastised severely for even daring to question the wisdom of the editorial board.
But that's Jeff Bezos's point, too. Bezos said that when newspapers take editorial stands, they inflict a bias on the coverage, at least in the public's mind. So if you're the conservative paper, then, of course, these articles are going to say bad things about Kamala Harris. It's the Tribune.
His argument a week before the election, it's kind of a week in the day.
He said the timing is bad, but this decision had been made a long time ago, even before the administration and Blue Origin, his company, were in talks about regulatory issues that would affect his company. He said it was just a coincidence.
To me, people who say no offense, but, and then go on to say something really offensive.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry. The timing is everything, and he shouldn't have chosen this timing. But yes. I would like to say one other thing about responsible endorsements, since you mentioned earlier about the judges race and you have no idea. There's, of course, voteforjudges.org that is a synthesis of all those different bar associations that do have an evaluation. So you can get them all by going to one place.
I'm going to print that up.
Or you could take the mailer from the Cook County Democratic Party. If you go to Vote for Judges, you will find that every one of the bar associations has called, I believe it's four judges, not qualified. There's a few other random votes against a judge here or there by another one or two. But there are four that every single bar association say is not qualified. So then Toni Preckwinkle sends her endorsements by the party. Vote for all the judges. They're all qualified. We need qualified judges.
Including the four that are judged not worthy. Wow.
Yeah. Shame on the Cook County Democratic Party.
They've done that for years.
Right.
Years. It's infamous that they do that because that's not true. They're not all qualified.
Okay.
And all the bar associations agree with that. And this is only to protect the party people. It has nothing to do with justice. And shame on Toni Preckwinkle. I didn't know she'd done that.
One last thing about the lack of endorsements from some of these major publications. Even if Bezos or Zorn or somebody has a point here about the futility of presidential endorsements, wouldn't it have made sense this one time to break that rule? Wouldn't this have been the one time that you just say, it's not about the Democrat or the Republican, it's bigger than that? How easy it would be, if ever it were, to not endorse Donald Trump at least and endorse Kamala Harris?
Yeah, I mean, this is a in case of fire break glass moment. It's true. But I mean, if I'm going to stick to principle here, which is that I don't think newspapers should endorse. I don't think there should be an institutional endorsement. I think that endorsements should come from individuals. So I would, you know, that's my take on
it. Just seems to me like that diminishes. I'll let everybody talk here, but that just seems to be diminish so much the role of a newspaper. In my mind, I've always looked to them, their reporters, their columnists, and their editorial board for guidance, which as an adult I can take or leave. But I always thought they know more about this than I do. And if they said something, I would measure that. I'm really surprised that these newspapers say, no, we don't want to be in that game. as a subscriber, I think they don't appreciate the value they bring.
No, I see what you're saying, John, for sure. Because, say, for the past, you know, 50 years, you've been reading the Tribune and thinking, oh, they're so Republican, they're so conservative, I'm never going to listen to them. And yet it's interesting to see what they say. It's just as valuable to hear what people you disagree with say to help you make up your own mind. Yeah. But you have to do it in an actual principled way. Unlike the way Jeff Bezos did it, you have to do it not when you're under the gun. You have to do it in an actual transparent process that you let the readers in on as you're doing it and announce it
and
way before you think it's going to affect your business. Yeah, and the staff.
When it comes to newspaper endorsements, are they meaningful? Probably not. But I can't discount that they might help somebody. And I'm kind of like, hey, I like to read stuff that I disagree with, you know? So maybe somebody who was on the fence, these 6%, 8% undecided people, I don't know how you're undecided at this point, but maybe reading a case makes the case. So at the end of the day, it's an abdication of responsibility and duty to what this is all about. And if we fall into a toppled American empire, in a sense, we're going to look back at decisions like this as one of the reasons why.
Yeah, I wonder if they, after the Madison Square Garden closing statement from the Trump campaign, were like, you know, maybe we ought to write an editorial about this. Maybe we ought to endorse somebody here. Did you watch much of that, Brandon, or hear much of that?
Yeah, I watched some parts of it. It was Donald Trump's greatest hits with special friends. And it's not surprising. If anything, it's a gift to the Harris campaign because it reminds people who need a reminding of the vile rhetoric that comes from Donald Trump and those he considers to be close associates. It's a reminder of the viciousness of the people around him, like Rudy Giuliani, who said that Palestinian people and Muslim people are raised from 2 years old to kill Americans. Just hateful bile. And if anything, it just reasserts what I have been saying for a very long time, and that people give me pushback on, of course, as they should if they'd like, but Donald Trump is the candidate of white supremacy. He is a white supremacist presidential candidate, and his whole ethos is white dominance, white Christian nationalist dominance. And that can't be ignored when it's literally blatantly out there. What a stupid move for his campaign, but the biggest shame is it may not hurt him at all.
Oh, I think it's going to hurt him some. The Puerto Rican community is certainly spreading the word. I mean, in the backlash came from not only people with huge followers. We've had a lot of conversations about how the social media influencers now are going to really throw votes one way or the other. Well, all the Puerto Rican influencers, and from Bad Bunny and J-Lo to whoever else I can't think of at the moment, are all backing her now. Maybe they were before, but they're being very vocal about it, and they're spreading the clip from that rally. The phone lines were lit up that night from the island to the mainland because the people who live on the island cannot vote, but they're calling their family members here in the States and saying, I want to be sure you saw this. You need to vote against Trump. So, and it doesn't have to move more than a, you know, handful of votes. Michigan and Wisconsin were decided by 3 to 4 votes per precinct last several elections. There's 500,000 Puerto Rican voters in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I was surprised Rudy Giuliani was on the stage. I saw him, and he's not looking any better than the last time you saw him, let me tell you. He was just all whipped up and disheveled and, like Brandon said, spewing ridiculousness. I thought he was supposed to be in jail by now, or at least living in a van down by the river. Hasn't he had to forego $148 million
in the Madison Square Garden?
I thought, wow, you should, like, because he's supposed to lose everything, but 3 World Series rings and maybe a condo in Florida, and the clock was ticking. If today isn't the 7th day, it's tomorrow. I mean, I thought he had a week to get rid of all of that, to turn that over to those 2 election workers. It was yesterday the day.
Yeah, so, I think yesterday.
So that might have been his last day in that suit.
Yeah, I know he's got to have it back by midnight.
I will say this. I want to say this to what Mars said, because I agree that like this may have helped a little bit for Harris, but I also still just have doubts about how relevant celebrity endorsements are in the first place. 2016, Hillary Clinton had some great celebrity endorsements. She had the greatest basketball player of all time in LeBron James. She had Beyonce. She had Jay-Z. She had so many heavy hitters, and she still lost. You know, like, I just feel like no matter who she gets at this point, people kind of expect that a lot of celebrities are going to lean Democrat, expect that a lot of Hollywood's going to lean Democrat. I'm not sure people really tune in or really are motivated by if their favorite singer is supporting Kamala Harris or not.
This late in the game, I wish they had done this sooner. We talked a little bit about this on the podcast last week. I'm less interested, Brandon, in who is saying these things, Marge, celebrities or otherwise. I wish they would say things that are a little more concrete, that will actually change people's lives. So saying that a comedian that stood up in Madison Square Garden for Trump said some awful things about Puerto Rico doesn't affect me. You know, it reinforces my notion that Trump's a lunatic and a hateful person, but that message is out there. This is just today's version of it. I wish they would say more concrete or substantive things like we should have home health care covered in part by Medicare, or that the economy is better and here's how I'm going to make it better still. Maybe that's boring stuff and it's too wonky, but
Beyonce? Did you hear what she said?
No.
She said, I'm not here as a celebrity. I'm not here as a musician. She did not perform. She said, I'm here as a mother. I'm worried about my daughters and their access to health care as they grow up. She made the health care case as women with daughters and granddaughters would do.
But she didn't perform, which really upset me.
That was a mistake. He wasn't there to perform. I have to say that was John's point.
You have Bruce Springsteen perform a cappella in front of a giant group that were like 90% of the people didn't even know who he was. I hate to say it, but that's what it looked like to me. And then Beyonce doesn't perform. That was a mistake.
Well, Brandon, Kate, if you're those kind of lightweight voters who would be swayed,
I believe they're called low
sign.
Information voters, is what they're called.
The problem, of course, is not us. The problem is all these swing state low information voters that we know exist and will, in fact, turn this election.
I don't know. The commercial I see on TV right now for Trump says that Kamala Harris would give sex change operations and that kind of health care to immigrants and illegal immigrants, even those that are incarcerated. And so I just kind of Googled around about that. The number of incarcerated individuals who have received that sort of medical care, incarcerated individuals, is 2. And there is no record of people who are being incarcerated and are here without documentation having received any of that care. And they are spending millions of dollars putting that message out there. And I thought, this is so stupid. This doesn't matter.
Now, what about all the public school children who are going to school as boys and coming back?
I know.
That's 2 more than I think
that's even less. I know it. So I'm just like, oh, this is so profoundly dumb. In other words, you don't have anything to say. And I think Kamala does have stuff to say. And getting caught up in this silo talk, or we feel good defending democracy and Trump is a fascist, is we know. Tell me something else, and I'm not hearing that.
Well, the culture wars is Trump's big card to play. And the tagline to that commercial, as awful as it is pretty strong. He says, she's for they, them. I'm for you.
More from the Mincing Rascals after a quick word from our friends in Ottawa. It's the middle of everywhere. Surrounded by open spaces, rivers, and trails, Ottawa is a natural setting. It allows you to get outdoors and enjoy some fall relaxation. Could you use some? Settle down and snuggle up in one of Ottawa's nearly 400 rooms. Everything from established hotels to luxury resorts and private rentals and B&Bs. Plan a fall trip today at visitottawail.com. Brought to you by Ottawa, the middle of everywhere, and the Illinois Office of Tourism. Okay, you're still rolling, right? Illinois Office of Tourism. And now, back to the Mincing Rascals. Eric, just talk to me about Lil Durk, because I am now saying Lil Durk for the first time in my life. What is that story? How does it have a Chicago connection? Why do I care?
Durk Banks is a local drill rapper. He's a very violent form of rap. And in the president, in the mayoral race last year, he gave $150,000, or organization that he manages gave $150,000 to Mayor Brandon Johnson. He was arrested last Friday as he was preparing to board a private jet to Italy on charges that he'd orchestrated a murder for hire plot in 2022 against a rival rapper in Los Angeles. And, Brandon Johnson's proper response would have been, you know, these are troubling allegations, and while Mr. Banks is entitled to the presumption of innocence, I'm directing his contribution be redirected to local anti-violence organizations. But instead, he sort of waffled around and said, well, I don't know all the circumstances. He hasn't been convicted of anything. You're asking me to make a judgment on a black man before a trial, and I don't operate in feelings. I operate in truth and justice. And he played the race card again. He said, Dirk is just a young black man who grew up in severe trauma that led to life choices that were bad and so on. And it was a layup. It was a fat pitch, whatever sporting metaphor you want to use for the Bayer. And he just blew it politically. It was one of those things where both the Sun-Times and Tribune editorialized against him as well they should. And it is this another example of this guy who just doesn't know how to be the mayor. And again, I politically, I'm not that far off from him, but managerially, he's just blowing it. And who knows who's going to replace him? But at this point, I don't see him getting reelected. He may not even be able to pass this budget that he's got, because he's got the city council that's kind of feeling the same way I am. Like, this guy's doesn't have it going on.
We all know that he of course is always talking about cooperating with people and being inclusive, etc. But it does seem like he has an automatic response to want to dig in his heels everything.
Yeah, he's stubborn.
Take everything personally. While I'm sure he finds it irritating, it is just a constant thing that happens with politicians. To have to go, oops, I took money from somebody who is now in trouble. I'm giving it back. It just happens all the time. It's not a bizarre situation.
And it washes the sin away. When you do that, I mean, that's logical. Guy gave me money. I didn't know this happened. Here's the money back. And the stain goes away.
Right. And instead, he wanted to take it as a personal attack, treat it that way, and respond to it that way. It is emblematic of his entire term so far, as short as it has been, where he takes things that don't have to be personal attacks, don't have to be a problem, and makes them into exactly that.
If his point is, and I don't know about playing it as a race card, a young black man who grew up in trauma, you know, led to life choices, a guy's life choices made him a lot of money. So, I don't know about that path, but if the mayor's point, which he didn't say, but is let's not judge him guilty, you know, until he's gone through a court of law, then the Sun-Times editorial, while they did call him to task, but not exactly the way you said, Eric, they suggest he use that money for youth programs and schools. And I think that is the right solution. I don't know whether he's guilty or innocent. I'll leave that to the courts to decide. But I know this is money that should be for sure directed toward other young men, other young black men who have limited choices in life.
Yeah, that's very well said, Marjorie. Right? I mean, I was suggesting anti-violence programs, but I think you're absolutely right that it would be much more targeted if you were to do something for programs for young people in disadvantaged communities. I think that's right.
Then he makes the point without sounding arrogant or defensive or like everything is in this lens about race. And it's on the side of justice and doing the right thing. That's how I'd like to hear him talk.
We said we would ask you all, who do you think is going to win? I suggested to my wife that I would talk about that on the radio and take calls today. And Brenda said, please, I can't take it. I don't want to know. I don't want to hear this. But I will ask, because it's been a hard week for a lot of people. It really has been. And it continues to be. We're recording this on Wednesday. We've got 6 days before we know the outcome. Brandon, who wants to start? Marge, you're upper left on my Zoom screen.
Yeah, I think Harris will pull it out thanks to the ground game, which Trump is just not putting it together. He's got those ads. Those ads play to the base, but he needs, as did Madison Square Garden. And I think Madison Square Garden really demonstrated how critical it is for him to appeal to a wider audience if he wants to win. He's got an edge in the Electoral College, but increasingly it's looking like Harris can sweep the Midwest blue states. The blue wall is strong, thanks to an incredible number of ground volunteers that were not there in 2016.
Well, I have to preface this by saying that I really don't think the election can be called at all at this point. I think Nate Silver had an article last week where he said, don't trust anybody's gut, even mine, because that's how razor thin it is, that it could be completely razor thin, or either one of them could pull it off in all seven swing states and have almost a blowout. So with that in mind, the question is, what is the bad feeling in the pit of my stomach? And I do have one. I do not, unfortunately, have the optimistic feeling that Marge does, that Kamala Harris is going to win. My gut feeling, even though nobody should trust anyone's gut, is that unfortunately I think that Trump may very well eke it out. I don't think the Madison Square Garden thing is going to make any kind of big difference.
Yeah, I'm ditto all of that. I insulate myself with that too. So therefore, I'm prepped for it. I would rather Kamala win, but if you ask me who do I think is going to win, I would say Trump.
It's a good way to psychologically shore yourself up, too.
I think that's what I'm doing, but that is my answer. Eric, who do you think is going to win?
We're going to be ruled by a dictator, but at least I predicted it.
So maybe that's going to work out for us.
I sense much more enthusiasm this year for Kamala Harris than I sensed in 2020 for Trump or for Biden. I think that the enthusiasm that I'm just picking up on out there is going to take the election for Harris. There's some impressive polling numbers this morning in Michigan and Wisconsin. And like I say, I think in 2020, it was all about we can't have Trump again. And in 2024, it's both we can't have Trump again and we're excited about Kamala Harris. I think she's a pretty exciting candidate. I think she's going to win. I think she's going to win bigger than Biden did.
All the news keeps trickling in. I mean, Mike Johnson just said that he would make sure that Obamacare is taken away if Trump wins. I don't think that's a helpful message for Donald Trump. My gut says Trump wins. However, I think Kamala Harris wins. I think she pulls it out. It's going to be very close, or it could be a blowout. But I think that the same polling issues we saw in 2022 in the midterms are back. I think there is a new silent majority of people who are just ready to turn the page and are going to hold their nose, not announce their vote, not put out a Harris wall sign, but they're going to make the choice they got to make. The Pennsylvania numbers scare me. It's like a 1% difference right now in some polling. That's going to be a big one. But ultimately, I think that Harris is carried by Black women, by the Atlanta Metro, by young people, by Gen Z, and by some disaffected Republicans.
If it comes down to young people, I'm going to bet on young women pouring out for their rights over the young men who just think Trump is hilarious.
Well, split verdict on the pals. Two to two predictions.
And if it's any consolation to our listeners, pretty much everything I always predict, say, or think, the opposite happens. So one last note from one of our listeners who sent me this postcard. This individual listens to my radio show, too, and doesn't always sign it. And I'm still not sure exactly who you are. But they wrote, "Hey, King John, greetings from your loyal South Carolina listeners / servants. I want to be king someday. Please pass along our appreciation to producer Pete and the Mincing Rascals. After every podcast, I tell my wife how sharp and informed they are. Keep up the good work, all you rascals. Signed, Jack in South Carolina." Thank you, Jack, for that. Sometimes we get real critical letters. I don't seem to bring them in as often as I do these. But if you ever do want to write to John Williams at WGNRadio.com, I'll be happy to pass along your greetings and suggestions.
You do forward them to me sometimes,
John. I do share them with Eric, though, and I go, ah, oh, what the hell? Okay, well, what the hell? That's this week's podcast. Brandon clicked out. Nice to have Kate, Marge, and Eric here. We're produced by Ben Anderson and Pete Zimmerman. I'm John Williams. Get out and vote if you haven't already. We'll drop another podcast on you next week. Do you think we'll know Wednesday at 10?
No.
Oh, hell.
Why is that so funny?
Oh, I'm
not.
It's Trump will declare victory at 7 o'clock. He's already tried.
I actually, you know, not only do I think Trump's going to win, I think it'll be, my second vote would be it's going to go to court and Trump wins. My third expectation would be that Kamala wins outright.
Well, you know, that he was saying that he and Mike Johnson have a little secret. I think a little secret is they're going to try to just cock things up so much that the election goes to the House of Representatives. Where
Yeah, and that would decide. Yeah, that would be it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Well, but for it to go to the House, it's got to be 270 to 270, right? Or whatever the number is, right? It has to be a dead
heat.
Yeah,
so he has to throw some of the certifications into question and take them out of the mix. Whittle down her wins by having them thrown out somehow is not the valid numbers. You know, certified elect. That's the whole thing about the alternate electors, the fraudulent electors that he tried before, which has been declared illegal. He can't do that again. So I don't know how he could do that. And let's not forget that now the Democrats control the Capitol Hill Police and the National Guard. They're not
going to
be able to storm the Capitol in the same way.
Wow, this is apocalyptic. That's why the blue dot matters a lot, too, doesn't it, in Nebraska?
One single
dot might make a difference.
I saw a really good Robert Reich piece about the red mirage. I hadn't heard the phrase before, but he explained why, you know, Bannon said before what they were going to do was declare victory. They were going to be ahead at the beginning. They would declare victory. And the tape of Bannon says, we won't have won, but we're going to say we won. And the reason that works is because the red votes are in smaller counties, rural districts where there are fewer votes to count. The blue ones in the big city take longer to count. They call it the red mirage because it always looks like the Republicans are ahead at the beginning if you don't look at the percentage of votes counted. Then there's a blue wave that comes back naturally when they count the big population centers. So we know that's going to happen. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. One other thing about that Madison Square Garden thing, though, is, first of all, I looked at the betting averages, and they have all either remained exactly the same or Trump has gained since before Madison Square Garden. Nate Silver's numbers are exactly the same as before. So I'm not seeing it move the needle. But also, President Biden completely screwed up by making his comment about the Puerto Rican joke. He did say, the only garbage I see is his supporters. He said that. I've watched the tape over and over again. He said it. And I know I turned on Fox News late last night to see what they were saying about it. And the show that they have on at like 11 o'clock has like what we have right here. And at the end, the host was like, did he really say, you know, Trump supporters are garbage or didn't he? You know, everybody. And even the ones who were like, I'm the reasonable person on Fox News. Even those people were like, yeah, he said it. Because you know what? He did say it. And they're going to be playing that clip of President Biden over and over and over again. And voters with it.
And it's such a good example of why Biden should not have been running.
Exactly.
At least he's not the cat. Okay, I won't vote for him.
Yeah. I don't know what he meant. He tried to clean it up. He tried to say that he was saying the people who were cheering on or whatever. He tried to put an apostrophe with supporters or something like that.
But that's not what he said. Yeah, it's not what he said. And to tell you the truth, I found it irritating this morning to hear NPR saying President Biden appeared to say Trump supporters were garbage. No, he didn't appear to say it. He said it.
Well, yeah, it's like, but I just can't get aboard with these people who are so, rending their garments and wailing about incivility when you've got Trump calling Kamala Harris retarded.
Of course. Oh, God,
us being the enemy, even the people in the media being enemies from within. So
The Fox people were so funny because they were like, you know, you have words are very important.
Yeah.
Biden shouldn't be throwing around the word garbage like that.
Yeah. Meanwhile, like, they said that essentially she was a prostitute because her handlers or supporters were pimps. Right, I mean, right. I think I know who works for a pimp. And when you say that, by extension, you're saying that. Thank you, Marge. Okay. Thank you, Kate. See you easy. Bye now.
Bye.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.